Your mom is a walleye.
This is Todd, the Rodfather Kukulinski, urging you to gather the whole family around the old TV set and tune into Public Access Channel 6429, Minocqua's Beast, for Todd and Dave's Christmas extravaganza, live via satellite from the Illinois State Penitentiary. At Musky 360 Records are proud to have posted bail and present to you the greatest musky fishing Christmas hits from Todd and Dave.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, if you know what I mean. Just like...
Make sure you and your family don't miss this Christmas extravaganza.
I'll see you in the shower, Todd.
Felice Naughty Todd. Felice Naughty Todd. Felice Naughty Todd. Felice Naughty Todd.
Be sure to tune in December 29th at 3:15 a.m. on Minocqua's Beast for Todd and Dave's Christmas extravaganza.
I'll see you in the shower, Todd.
All right, folks. Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay Bird.
Hey, Steve.
Are you geared up? Have you set an alarm on your phone for 3:15 a.m.? For the Todd and Dave Christmas special, are you going to TiVo that or record it on a VHS tape, or what do you think?
I don't know yet. I mean, I've got to own it somehow, right, some way. So I guess I'll figure that out. I got time. What is that, 2 weeks?
I don't know.
Till it airs?
I don't
something
know if
like
it's
that.
Available.
Just after, it's weird. It's a Christmas special, but it airs after Christmas.
Maybe it's available on Betamax.
Yeah, probably.
Who knows? So, yeah. Well, listen, you take the airtime you can get. Todd and Dave could only get a couple days after Christmas. But you're still in the holiday spirit.
Oh, the holiday spirit with those guys is amazing. It's just amazing. Incredible. It's very intense.
How white is your Christmas? Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. So, anyway, goodness gracious. We got some big stuff going on at Muskie Shop. Big Christmas Reel Special, Monday, yeah. December 14th. One day only.
One day only.
Can't
Massive ha- discounts
Here's
on
the deal.
Pretty much every Muskie reel you like.
Here's the deal, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Because of manufacturers' deals with big box stores, which we're not, can't say what the pricing is. It's one of those annoying, you got to put it in the cart to see. But we can't advertise. You know what I'm saying?
Can't advertise the specials.
You can't.
But
yes,
just load them in the cart and you'll be able to see what the price is. So
yep,
big stuff going on there. Other than that, Jay, you geared up for the holidays?
Absolutely. I'm ready to rock. How about you?
Have you decked your halls and hung your balls? Mm-hmm. Christmas bowl.
Yeah. Everything's squared away.
Wonderful.
Yep. Yep. Saw neighbor Steve and actually played him a little Todd and Dave there earlier and got his approval. So, yeah, they were laughing.
they've been blessed. The blessings continue. Mm-hmm. Anyway, goodness, what do you do? We already had Christmas, Jay, because we can't wait. We're impatient children at my house.
You guys have some weird Christmas rules. Yeah,
we do. Like, if you buy something that you really want to give somebody, meaning Jody, there's only two of us.
Yeah, you can't wait.
I'm
you
like, just do open it now.
Mm-hmm.
Now. So we pretty much do the Christmas until we go and visit family. So the rest of the month, we just buy crap. If Amazon's not dropping something off once a day, it's never
ending. Had a lot of those too.
Yeah, it's
yeah. Check your mailbox tomorrow; you might be getting something.
Oh, you will be as well, sir.
We'll have to talk about that on the next podcast.
You just wait; you're gonna die.
Okay.
Life changing. Speaking of life changing, my good friend Joe Booker. Down there doing the Florida thing. I just want to catch up with him and just be like, hey, what you doing? We talk quite frequently, you know?
Yeah, right.
Pretty much all week. But as far as just getting on the phone and gabbing, I said, you know what? Let's just do it on the podcast. So we sort of caught up here. So I'm going to go ahead and roll that and let her rip. It's some great stuff from Joe Booker. Me and him gabbing back and forth. Here she blows. All right, guys, I've got the man, the myth, the legend, one of my best friends in the whole world, Joe. No other name, just Joe. What are you doing, Joe?
How you doing, buddy? Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you. Wait till we did.
You know, that's very politically incorrect, but I say it with pride. Merry Christmas.
Absolutely.
They'll
come cancel you at any moment now. So, not for saying Merry Christmas, for being friends with me, Joe.
So, you know what? Hey, it's Muskie 360. It's a Merry Muskie 360 Christmas for sure.
Oh, we've been killing it, baby.
That's it. You got her. What's on your mind tonight?
To be honest with you, the reason why I give you a shout, obviously a lot of people that listen to the podcast, they're iced out, right? And your Southern guys, they're getting in the doldrums. We're getting at the stuff. But what I want to pick your brain about is because you keep texting me these awesome pictures. These big red fish, right?
Right.
And me and you, it's one of these deals. We're musky guys through and through and through and through and through, right? But yep. It's structure fishing. It's a game plan. It's a thought process. And I think it's so amazing. I've watched you transfer 60 years of fishing knowledge into redfish, and you've gone from trying to figure these things out to you're consistently catching big fish. Basically, I just want to hear what you're doing, whether it be redfish, whether it be muskies. How do you dial in on big fish, right? Me and you were talking the other day. You're keeping notes on the tide, right?
Right.
Much like you used to keep notes on Moonface. How do you organize fishing? In a logical way. I think that's the biggest thing that I've ever taken from you is like organizing a game plan, organizing a thought process. How do you think ahead and how do you execute? Let her rip.
Well, you know, what's interesting is, you know, all the fundamentals that we talk about and that we've learned, and I say we, you know, as an industry now, and that I've taught myself even over the years to countless anglers is that, you know, all your listeners, when you think about your success and your failures, but what I try to do, and this is how I even learned this, to hunt these big bullzilla sized redfish, you know, these redfish that, you know, the locals down here didn't even know they really existed at these kind of numbers of these big fish.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't say that in any way to be arrogant. What I'm saying is that What I did with my redfish fishing, the same thing I've done with my musky fishing, and, you know, really all the other, from what hunting big whitetails to, you know, to hunting big muskies and these big redfish, it's the common denominator is this. One of the things is before I get into details, is simplify your game plan.
Mm-hmm.
Just simplify your game plan and then analyze, really analyze your success. In other words, once you succeed, mm-hmm. if you know, you're fishing big muskies and you finally catch one, you know, after all the photos and the release and all the hoopla and everything else, and you're toasting a beer and everything else, you know, and especially once you're back at the dock and, you know, you're just about to fall asleep and you're trying to collect your thoughts, or the next morning over a cup of coffee, you do it some more, and you just start marking these things down. What transpired?
Yeah.
What transpired at that moment to make one of these big fish bite? And when you do that, and you start putting together, I look at my wife when we're going shopping. If I forget to make a grocery list, she'll make a grocery list. And if we don't make that grocery list, forget something. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Well, okay. Well, if you mark down these key things that happened when you were successful, you know, what was the wind? What was the moon? What was, you know, in down here, it's real critical. These tide, what was the tide? What were you using? How deep were you fishing? If you're trolling, how fast were you trolling? How, you know, all these things, details on your tackle, you marked on all of these things. So, and why would you do that? The reason you do that is so that you can duplicate it.
Right. Replicatable.
You got to be able to replicate. Exactly. Replication. Replication is key. So, remember the old adage, you know, you can be lucky once, but once you start catching fish again and again, you know, if you're throwing a lot of touchdown passes, it's not lucky.
No.
It no longer becomes luck. Everybody can shoot a big buck once.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start shooting big bucks a lot, you start catching big muskies a lot.
Right.
You know, with these big redfish down here, what I did was from year one, 3 years ago till now, is that I built a knowledge base. You know, I built this record of successes. And, you know, here's the other thing. You know, when you're going over those same spots and you're not successful, it kind of answers the questions. And when you look back and you go, oh, well, I was fishing that spot, but, you know, conditions really weren't right.
Right.
You know, and what you as a guide fishing as many days as you fish, you know, there's different captains in the captain chair at different times of the day.
I know exactly. Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So yeah. So you go, you pull into a spot that you've caught one of these real big ones in, and you're telling your customers all about it. It's part of the game. It's part of the fun of fishing with a guy too. It's like, well,
here's the story.
Here's the story. Here's, you know, this spot has produced, you know, some of my biggest fish.
Better watch out.
And then all of a sudden it either doesn't produce or produces a much lesser fish.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've learned with that too is that when these spots produce lesser fish, most of the time it's under lesser conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, I'll give you a classic example down here just yesterday. The tide right now, the window of opportunity with this tide is about 15 to 20 minutes.
Right.
I'm serious. That's tight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I do is I spend the majority of my time catching dinner, fishing around, doing a bunch of things and going through the motions. And while you do that, by the way, whether you're musky fishing or you're bass fishing or anything else, but when, you know, this is a musky app and musky 360, when you're musky fishing, we all go through the motions and we're always looking for that fish that doesn't play by the rules.
Please. Yes. Give me a dumb one. Yeah.
We get a dumb one now and then. But what I'm getting at is there are also those times when it's predictable. You know, it's probably going to happen if I put myself in a good situation. So what I did, for example, yesterday, I sent you a photo right before we went on the air together of, you know, like the fifth or sixth bullzilla I caught this week. Right?
Yeah, I know. And Red Fishing with Joe Booker. It's presented it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I checked all those spots earlier in the day, and there was nothing going on in those spots. And so I went and just started running and gunning, and you know, I caught some smaller fish for supper, and I'm going through the motions, you know, doing everything I can to, you know, I'm still fishing, looking for the one that doesn't read the book, And, you know, it didn't happen on a big fish. And then I thought, okay, it's time. So in other words, where I'm going, just to put a stop right there. Okay. If I'm a muskie guy and I'm on a big fish water and I know one spot for sure. Is my big fish spot, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's a little lake in northern Wisconsin or it's a bigger body of water. But if I know there's one spot, I want to be on that spot at the best possible time. Mm-hmm. So what I did yesterday is I made my run to the best spot yesterday, right at that time when I've been watching these tides when they're doing what's been producing these fish. And I was, once I got on that spot, you know, boom, you know, and when you hook this redfish, you know, then it's just that's when the fun begins.
Zip and drag.
Oh my gosh, they pull and they just strip drag, scream line out, and the fight lasts, you know, without exaggerating, it lasts probably 10 times as long as a muskie.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's just, I still can't get over the stamina.
Mm-hmm.
The absolute power. You know, and I didn't have muskie gear. I say, well, but you're not fishing with muskie gear. I'm telling you, if you try to snub those fish with muskie gear, you're still not going to stop them.
No, not reds that big. No.
You just can't stop them. They just have too much power. But anyways, I scored. How many really big ones did I get yesterday? One. But when did I catch it? You know, during that prime time. So and how did I know to be there? Keeping good records. And there's always that fish that doesn't read the book. You know, there's a few of those. But if you take the time to document things that work, you just find out that. And again, you and I just talked about it a few minutes ago. You pull into the great spots that have been producing for you over the years, and you pull in there and they're not there, or there's a much smaller fish there. It just means the big one isn't there.
Right.
Because when you pull in there, the big one's there.
Right.
The
you know.
Yeah. That's right. And the big one runs that place, and that's the dominant fish. And that's one of the things that anyways, you know, just how that's transposed from muskies to redfish. That's pretty much what I did, you know, and I, that's been my philosophy for a long time. And, you know, by and large, it has worked.
So for people that are muskie guys and say, you know, we got a lot of Illinois, northern Wisconsin, Minnesota guys, right? You made your name Northwoods, right?
Yeah.
Let's say that, you know, you've actually given me some of your old maps and all this stuff, so I know what's on there, right? But what are you breaking down? Let's say you pick the quintessential lake X up north, right? And you're on that, you're looking at that one lake and it's in the Northwoods. What are you documenting as far as that? Is it wind direction? Is it temperature? And like, how are you dialing in on those spot on spot so it's replicatable up north on these skis?
I think it's easier today, Steve, than it was, you know, back in the day when I was really hot and heavy into it. Right? I kept notebooks. I got to show you all of these notebooks.
Oh, I've seen a couple. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's. I've got the same thing with my whitetails where I, you know, at my hunting camp, where I've got. They're in a safe, but I got just, you know, detailed. Even when I have a big buck come through, I write down everything that was going on during that time, so that, because you forget.
Oh yeah, so, you know, perspective. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. You know what I mean? What you think happened, and then, you know, a couple hours ago, you forget. So what I do in today's world is, I use my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I take notes with my phone.
Right.
I take pictures. For example, the tides. For example, that I'm studying right now. I have a tide, a local tide app that I follow.
Mm-hmm.
And when that fish is boated, I take a picture of that tide at that moment.
Right. So you might be. For the muskie nuts, take a picture of the weather app you're using and the moon phase on 360. Screenshot that 360 thing. Yeah.
I use the moon phase. I use the moon app on Muskie 360 all the time to dial myself in as to where to be at the, and the majors, the minors, you know, the moonrise and moonset. I mean, it's right on the money. And I'll tell you, here's one other thing. The moonrise, the first big bola, for example, I caught this winter, hit right within minutes of moonrise. Ooh. Within minutes. So, yeah. So, but today's anglers got a leg up on a lot of things by just taking a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Your photograph of your fish.
Yeah.
Has the time documented on it, right?
Right.
A lot of times what I'll do too is I'll take the time on the fish. You know, I caught that fish yesterday, I think at like 3:13 or 3:14 in the afternoon. And, the tide was just, what I'm finding at these tides right now, by the way, is at the bottom of the tide.
Mm-hmm.
When the tide, you got a rising tide and a low tide every day, high tide and low tide. What I'm finding these fish on right now, because of the way the tide falls during daylight, is we're fishing during a dropping tide throughout most of the day, and then it hits a bottom somewhere during the day. So, and it's a really odd factor to be out there in the ocean if you're not familiar with, all of a sudden spots where you were catching fish are out of the water.
Just dry land.
And then a couple of days later you fish that spot and it's got 3 feet of water in it. So understanding tides just from a travel safety aspect are important too. But what I'm doing right now is I notice that as soon as that I get through the bottom end of that low tide and it starts to come up, how these fish can sense that little bit of, it's amazing, but they sense it. They sense it. And so, that's been one of the big things. Moonrise has been a big thing. And my time on my photograph of the fish. That's why it's important to take photographs of your fish, because you can use that time as a reference. And then, weather. I have a weather app. Everybody's got their different weather apps. Let me see, what weather app am I using here? I'm using AccuWeather.
Mm-hmm.
So I use AccuWeather, and even before I go out, I check the wind. I check, what kind of frontal activity is moving around. And of course you got to do that anyway, no matter what's happening. But, what you and I have learned, what good musky anglers tend to recognize without a doubt is that these certain spots turn on in certain wind.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, why is that spot not on right now? Well, the wind isn't hitting it right. And when the wind's hitting it right, it's on.
And it can be just minutia of the wind angle.
Wind angle, sure.
Yes. I mean, just a slight little bit. It's southeast by this many degrees. But I think, and what you're getting at, it's a time on the water thing, whether it be salt water, whether it be musky water, whatever it is. Is notating the exact literal condition. Because, I mean, from filming, right? Learn this from you. I mean, I remember one of the first fish I caught on camera with you. I said I did this, and we went back and watched the footage, and I was just straight cranking. I thought I was doing something grandiose, right? Yeah. I thought I was really, like, twitching. And I said it. I think I said it on camera. I was like, I was doing this, and this. Well, if you watch the footage, I'm just straight retrieving. And it's so important to have that point of reference, whether it be just your phone documentation or you're running a GoPro in the boat, because excitement, adrenaline, and just sometimes just not, it just, it's hard to go, what exactly happened in that moment to tell this is the truth.
The way you think it happened and the way it happened,
often different.
They don't necessarily line up. Yes.
No. And I mean,
I agree.
And it's just one of these things. I've been twitching all day long. Well, the one cast we catch a fish on, I've gotten lazy and straight retrieved. Well, thank God I did, but
isn't it funny too? How many times I've seen myself do it. You can watch my YouTube channel, you can see it, or I turn my head to scratch my ear, or or I'm looking at
boom,
a boat coming in the distance, and there's some kind of a change in the retrieve, or just even a pause where you make a jerk on the lure, and your pause is more prolonged because you're doing something else, and all of a sudden, boom, you got a fish on there, and you don't remember it being like that.
No,
but then when you watch the video, you go,
hmm,
this is And then you can easily replicate that. Actually, that is really one of the ways I have found some of the techniques. That, like, for example, the hybrid technique that I always talk about with minnow baits and crankbaits is where I jerk it for a while, and then I end up cranking it straight so that I improve my chances on the figure eight. Mm-hmm. And I just noticed, you know, by even watching my friends fish as well as myself, that, you know, sometimes it was the twitch, sometimes it was the crank.
Right.
You know, and sometimes it was a pause. And like you say, if it was a, if you had a video, if you had taped, well, you know, you had it on video, then you could, you can review that and
see what really happened.
That's why I think, that's why I think it's important to try and recall these things and take, you know, instead of just blowing it off and going, yeah, it was a cool fish and that was a cool moment. Okay, let's move on.
Analyze.
If you just move on, I think you miss an opportunity to get to just get better,
right?
And be able, if you know, you get, you also get, and when the muskie game, let's face it, with the muskie game, you know, the big ones especially, you just don't get enough chances. So when you get chances, what made them special, right?
I think I get more analytical after a big catch than I do laying. You know, you get a skunk, right? You come home, it's a skunk, you're in a bad mood, you lay there and go, what did I do wrong?
Yep.
That's the time to, I guess, in some capacity, you know, self-critique and go, was it boat control? Was it off moon? Was I not paying attention enough to this, that, and the other? I think the time to get hyper analytical and beat yourself up is when you get a big fish.
And you know what? At the same time, you brought up a great point, because those tough days teach you a lot.
Yes, if you're paying attention.
Yeah, those days when you go home with nothing, for one, they're humbling. And you know, you get straightened out in a hurry. You go, you know, I'm not as good as I thought I was. And no matter how much you think you know, you don't really know very much.
Right.
And you know, I trust me. I'm talking to your listeners. You know, I'm saying, trust me when I tell you this, that my guy's been fishing as long as I have, and I'm supposed to be pretty good at this. I still don't know that much. You know, because. You know, there's just so many variables out there, and you're dealing with living creatures and conditions. I look out at, you know, whether it's Lake of the Woods or it's Green Bay or it's Chocktahatchee Bay down here in Florida, and I look out and go, man, that's a lot of water. Where are they? You know, and here's another thing, this is something that. I don't think everybody agrees with me on this, but I believe it to be true that, for example, you've heard me say this too. Not every day is an A day.
Right.
In fact, not every day is even a B or a C day. Mm-hmm. More often than not, those days are D days. And, and when you can catch a fish on a C or a D day, but you know, most days aren't A days.
No.
And you can say that about life.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. You know, when you get up those days when, well, you know, even weather-wise, you get up and you want to do some things, but the weather won't allow you to do it. You know,
as old as we're all getting, it's when you wake up and you just feel like you played a game for the Packers the night before, but you didn't.
Exactly.
It's like, I feel like I just played four quarters with no pads on. Wonderful.
Well, you're right. And you know, the older you get, trust me, the harder that is. You know, I went through some health issues myself this summer. So when I'm feeling, once you feel healthy again, you go, you know, it's good. It's an A day for me just to get up and go after them. And then when, you know, but all else, you know, all that being discussed is that, you know, you're going to have a lot of days that just aren't really good fishing days, but you're still going fishing.
Yeah.
So when you get out and you go fishing, you know, the fact that you're on the water, you go through the motions and do things because you're out there and enjoying the sport, even though it doesn't appear to be, you know, an A condition. With that being said, you've had this happen. I've had this happen. Mm. Just about everybody out there that's listening that's had some success has had this happen, that you go out on some of those days that aren't A days with not much expectation,
mm-hmm.
but you do things right and you fish the good spots and you still catch a good one.
And you're surprised. Some of the biggest sometimes.
Yeah, and then and the victory is so sweet on those kind of days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think sometimes on these bad days, though, you know, if it's low-hanging clouds, there's a storm coming, right? Quote-unquote perfect musking conditions.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you're just wound up too tight.
Yeah,
right? And sure. You go out and you go... I can just imagine, me and you are standing on the boat, and there's a storm coming, and we're going to blast shallow weeds, right? Thinking a giant's coming out. But on a cruddy day, you might just be a little bit looser. You know, a little more cast and blast, a little bit more off the edge.
Yeah.
And I think conceptually, you know. Heck, the other thing you said about just getting older, it's just like, just being there sometimes. I don't even know if I care about catching fish anymore, Joe. It's just being made it to this point. It's just good to be there.
So. Well, you know, it's funny you should say that because, you know, so often I run into people even down here at the boat landings where I'm down here in Florida or up in Wisconsin, whatever. Say, well, how's the fishing? I said, I always my comment is standard. I said, the fishing's always good.
Right.
It's the catching that sometimes isn't.
It's the catching that's the tough
part. I had a great day of fishing, but I didn't catch much, you know?
Yeah, it did. And at a certain point, folks, if you don't get it, you lose the competitive thing, okay? So it's just don't care, you know?
No.
Don't
you know what's funny about that is that at my stage, I the competitive thing, you know, I like competing with the fish.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah. And I avoid competition with anglers as much as possible. I do not want to compete with these charter captains.
No.
I do, you know, I want to leave them have all the room they need, and you know, because they're trying to get folks fishing. And so I stay away from it. When I'm in up in northern Wisconsin or, you know, up in anywhere in Wisconsin, Canada, wherever, I don't want to go where there's a whole bunch of boats. I want to go I want to do my own thing, you know, and have my own spot to myself. I want to compete with the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot to compete with.
Yeah, that's tough enough most days.
Yeah. I want to figure out what's going on, what they're up to. There is that thing that tournament anglers really have to deal with. This is the fishing pressure element in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to avoid the fishing pressure element in the game wherever I can. And hunting those big fish helps a lot in that regard, because if you're hunting big fish, a lot of times you're off the beaten path.
You're by yourself.
Yeah.
You're just out there like everybody else is beating the edge, and you're out there twiddling your thumbs around open bait or some deep structure or this, that, and the other. One thing I want to pick your head about, because it's pretty relevant this time of year for Southern guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
That 8 to 12 foot break.
Mm-hmm.
Two things that come into mind quickly that I've made my name and my living with: standard DR and the mm-hmm. countdown DR.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of break it down from a trolling perspective. I think the most important thing for you Southern guys, most of your muskies is 8 to 12, maybe 15 on a real bad day. How do we target that with a standard DR, right? Mm-hmm. And then some of this deeper stuff, I think more than anything, what you taught me is not the countdown depth rater is not about throwing some of them deep, monstrous hole, right? That's going to be thrown to that lateral, right? Throwing those big, long contours, getting it out there and keeping it there. What was your thought and development there? How are you targeting these 8 to 12 fish on the depth rater and then on the countdown casting?
Well, they were really developed for two different things. But you know, let's talk about the that break line fishing. You know, that 8 to 12 foot,
mm-hmm.
eight to twelve foot. In my opinion, 8 to 12 feet is the casting zone.
Mm-hmm.
Casting break line. You know, that 12, that you could argue that you know, the 12 to 18 is a great trolling zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you add in that 12 to 18, then, you know, I cast a lot from 8 to 12 feet.
Right.
I cast a depth rater, and, you know, and I cast parallel to brake lines more than I do casting perpendicular to them, because I want that bait to be in that, on that brake line, in that zone. So, I'll position my boat so that I'm fishing that brake line. I usually have somebody else fishing over top on the flat with something shallow.
Right.
And my depth reader is shooting straight. You know, if straight is just 12 o'clock off the bow, I fish 11 to 1. Mm. Maybe a little bit stronger, 10, once in a while 10, you know what I mean?
Right.
But
you're saying, folks, if you haven't got it, face the clock face.
Right.
Right. Joe's right. clock right. drill, which is if the boat is dead noon, it's 12 o'clock, the angles you're fishing. So you're covering sort of that entire brake line, you know, sort of maybe it might be 13 to 10 or it might be 17 to 8. But that's what he's referring to. Yeah. I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify that. Yeah.
Exactly. If you grab a depth reader and try to throw it the way you throw a blade or a topwater, perpendicular, in other words, over the flat, at 9 o'clock, for example, 8, 9, 10 o'clock, you're throwing over shallow water most of the time, and it's not as effective. You're much better off when you're fishing deep diving crankbaits is to fish parallel more often than not. So the guy in the bow fishes a deep diving crankbait in a parallel fashion, and if anybody else is in the boat and wants to fish shallow, they're fishing, we're talking about a clock angles here, they're fishing that 8, 9, 10 o'clock, 7 o'clock, they're fishing, you know, perpendicular over the shallow flat with something that runs nice over that shallow flat. And they're not trying to throw a depth raider.
Right.
They're not trying to throw a deep diving crankbait, one of our other friends that make all these different lures. You're trying to throw. You have to approach fishing deep diving crankbaits different. Now, there's a difference between a floating diving crankbait, like the original depth raiders, and a sinking crankbait, like a lipless crankbait, or, for example, the countdown depth raider. And what I designed a countdown depth raider for is two things. One, to fish suspended fish. So, you know, if you got fish at, say you're catching fish in that 12 to 18 foot range, you can throw it out. And conventional musky gear sinks about 1 foot per second. It sinks horizontally, so it doesn't tangle, doesn't tumble and tangle like other lures might. So we designed it so that you can throw it out, engage your reel, and 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, 1,004, and so on, get down to where you want to be, you start cranking, the lure's at that depth. Now, the other thing that it does that folks need to understand is any time you have a sinking crankbait, like whether it's a lipless crankbait, again, that performs pretty much the same way, is speed control does not dictate running depth like it does with a floating diver. You throw a floating diver out, you crank it slow, it's the topwater lure.
Right.
You throw a sinking crankbait out, you crank it slow, it sinks, it suspends and stays at that level. So you cast it, so it makes it a better cold water bait. Is where I guess where I'm. So, you know, in the winter like this, you know, southern musky anglers, the countdown is a killer bait this time of the year because you can crank it really slow. One, if you work it like a jerk bait, it's going to stay where you're at. And you can modify a lot of your existing floating divers to become neutrally buoyant or sinkers. And you and I have done this with little depth raiders especially.
Oh, yeah.
Little crankbaits. Oversize your hooks. You don't really have to do much else to it. So just oversize the hooks until the bait no longer floats and it starts to sink.
Yeah.
And it sounds awful simple, but it actually works.
It works. And I mean, it really just a ridiculous sort of a rip, twitch, pause, you know, just erratic. It seems like in the winter and the colder time of the year, you know, a rising bait is bad, but a falling bait's going to get eaten. You know, just not to be afraid of something like that, where the rest of the time of the year, you know, you rip a twitch a bait down and it rises up and he grabs it on the rise. A lot of times they're going to grab it on the fall. They're down deep in general. You know, yes. You're trying to coax them up. I don't care what water clarity is. I don't care what moon phase is. I don't care about this, that, or the other. Those fish want to be deep later in the year. You know, and I think that's what I like about that sinking depth rater is just that I can get it where I want it to be consistently. I think that's probably the biggest thing is that, and I think what I look at with that bait, Joe, is I like rubber baits, right? Like your Bulldogs and Medusas. But at a certain point, we become relegated to we have to keep that bait moving. And I think what I like about the sinking and the suspending depth rater is I can just let it hang forever.
I think you said the key word there is never forget. Our listeners never forget that hang time is can be a big ally in cold water.
Would it safe to say hang time is bang time, Jay?
That's right. Exactly.
Hang time is bang time.
The musician's always coming out.
Had a drinker. I've had a drink or two, Joe. I'm not going to lie.
I like it. It sounds like one of those country songs from downtown Nashville.
What? Hang time is bang time. Netflix and chill.
All right, let's get back up. So hang time. Let's talk about hang time and fishing in cold water. I learned this bass fishing again is that these neutrally buoyant, slow sinking minnow baits. I saw these guys catching a lot of fish in the central part of the U.S. This is, you know, 30, 35 years ago, modifying. Back then, they didn't really have suspending minnow bait, jerk bait, so to speak, because these guys would modify them by putting bigger hooks on them and adding plumber's lead tape to them. Now they have stick-on lead tape, and they call it, you know, suspended dots and all kinds of things. But it's basically, it's just plumber's lead tape. And the key thing was, you know, what cold water anglers found out, even in the bass fishing, walleye fishing is just as deadly like this, is that, you know, cranking it down with a couple of jerks and then just jerk 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, pause, jerk, you know, you're getting this jerk action combined with a pause, and more often than not, all of a sudden your line goes tight and you got a fish on and you weren't cranking, you weren't jerking. Right. The fish actually grabbed it while it was hanging there. And this is a deadly way to fish in cold water.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
I think that's what, even with the soft rubber baits, you know, the whole swim bait, soft rubber bait routine is one of the things that makes it also deadly is not only is it deep, but they go deep, but they have a hang time element to them as well.
Right. There's the paw. If you rip it, it arcs up, stops sort of the top before it falls. Just naturally, weak, disabled, wounded bait fish, it seems like they skitter a little bit and they stop. And I think that's the one thing. Like, you've done it. I've done it. I guarantee you've watched hundreds of fish die in the water. You know what I'm saying? Over the years.
Yep.
And just being observant, whether it be a minnow or a shad or a walleye, they sort of do this, and they stop. And I'm not trying to be grim or macabre, but you go, that's what a dying fish does. This, stop.
Yes.
Then this, stop.
Yep.
And it's not like they sink or they fall generally. They just sort of hang there for a second because they have a swim bladder and they're buoyant. And you go, okay.
Yep. Yeah, and you think about that. You know, predators sense that vulnerability. They say, you know, you can look at a whole school of of shiners or ciscos or you know, perch or whatever, and all of a sudden you got one that's kind of acting funny, and then it just kind of hangs there. You know, boom, that's the one he's going to pick out.
Right.
And you know, it creates that vulnerability, even when a muskie's following deep, and boom, and it just paused. You know, you're just coming along, and it pauses again, and I mean, muskie fishing and with jerk baits and stuff, that's kind of, you know, been one of the staples is that pause. And in cold water, it's the pause with the hang time that it doesn't go up or it doesn't go down. It just hangs.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking, you know what I mean? That, I think that's a key thing.
You know, obviously, big JBO fan, and you know, everybody listening to the podcast knows I make the diving rights. But one thing I've told you I've done forever is just taking my straight DRs, right? And you got to sort of do it per each bait, but find that magic super slow rise weighting, right?
Yes.
Now you've got, you know, whether it be like my Titan from Suic or a Suic where it's like a super slow dive and rise, but you can get that really dig down off that cover because that's something you can't do in the winter months, like that typical dive and rise off a weed edge or a rock edge, right?
Right.
But you can take a straight DR, whether you do it with hooks or whether you do it with bell sinkers or plumber's tape,
rip
it down and touch the bottom and let that thing slow rise, which I always think of my depth raters as my late fall, wintertime jerk baits. You know, I really think that's one thing that's overlooked is like how many, I know you've done that a million times, get it weighted where that thing just rises, that deathly slow rise, but that lip, the crankbait aspect of it is going to get it down in the, I hate the word strike zone, but it's going to get it down the zone you want to be.
Quicker. Well, that's a good word. Yes, you're right. And the deep diving crankbait gets you down there where you need to be.
Right.
Yes. I think another thing to point out, too, is that, you know, we were talking earlier about documenting things with your phone and taking notes and stuff. I think the big thing that phones today make those things all you know, technology makes all that stuff available. I think the other thing that's cool is today we have it's just such a better tackle selection. So you can go to the Muskie Shop, or you can go to Muskie Shop catalog, and you can get a selection of trebles. You can even get stick-on weights and screw-in weights and all that stuff.
You name it, yeah.
Yeah, and weighted leaders. You can get all this stuff. So you can really get yourself set up for cold water fishing way better than you could 10 years ago. Investing in, you know, one time and a couple things like that to get yourself – so you can take a favorite lure and just get it tweaked so that it really is really deadly in that cold water period.
Speaking of
– catch more fish.
And this is something I stole from you. And if you guys have been on my boat or going to be on the boat, you know I got it. I call it the Mod Box, right? So there's this Plano, typical thin Plano box – full of stuff to modify baits. And I stole that from you because you're always, that's one thing that Joe's always doing. You're always tweaking baits, right?
Yep. You are too.
I stole it from you. but, you know, like you said, the plumber's tape. And I think like, whether it be, I think this is all cyclical from where you started. And I just know the way our brains work, right? Because you started about climactic and water observations, right? That's where you started. But now we're at observing what your bait is doing in the water column and how it reacts.
Yep.
Our brains have gone there, right? Which is the same thing. So to sort of tie it together, because I know me and you both have ADD from all get out, right?
Right.
Where we're at is, I think what Joe's trying to say, and I think we're both getting there, is observe what is happening on your given body of water. Right. Make an assessment on how to address where the big fish are. Now we're addressing how to target those big fish based upon conditions on how to modify our tackle.
Yep.
And that's the thing with the Mod Box, where it's like you just said that. And my brain went for, you want to have that plumber's tape. You want to have rubber core sinkers, because I don't care if it's winter, spring, summer or fall. A slop master with rubber core is going to get there. Right.
Right.
Or weighting your DR, or sometimes it's
heavier gauge hooks.
Heavier gauge hooks with, I mean, I've made a living twitching 5-inch shallow raiders in the dead of winter at creek channel mouth that are sinking.
Yep.
So
yep.
What are some things other than, I know so we got the plumber's tape. What are some things you keep on the boat that are handy there, Joe? Like, soft glue, like what's some stuff you come to? What's some of the dumbest stuff you ever done to catch a fish?
What's funny about that is it's what I'm doing down here right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the learning curve in 3 years down here with these big bull reds is modifying my lures. so that they will fit these situations. Because mm-hmm. one of the things, very much like big muskies, is you know, you have to think about the one fish you don't want to get away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, that's overkill. No, it's not overkill.
No, I know. Where is he?
Yeah.
That's
And if you don't modify those lures, just from a strength and durability standpoint, not even a performance standpoint,
uh-huh.
They fail on the fish that you most want to catch.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you, these bull reds taught me that again. Like I just, you know, like I was just as a beginner fisherman, you know, going out there, finding out what they want to bite, but then finding out that, oh boy, the way this lure is built right now.
And no, no bueno.
I'm losing them. I'm, you know, mm-hmm. the hooks are pulling out, the split rings are opening up, the, you know, the leaders are parting, everything. It's just not good. These reds, by the way, down here, they have such strong jaws, they will crush the lures.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, if you catch them on a multi treble hook lure, a big, you know, bullzilla sized uh-huh. bull red, they will grab a hold of the trebles. They get two trebles in them. They will bite down on that lure and pull the split rings right out. I mean, not the split rings, that too,
yeah.
but the line ties. You'll come in with a lure with no line ties on it.
Ooh.
Yes. So, wow. You know, so when you get up, when going, you know, when I'm in the boat, I always have, on the musky end of things in particular, I, you know, always have replacement trebles.
Mm-hmm.
I have a dedicated box of replacement trebles. Going out on a lake with just your tackle box and, you know, no replacement trebles is a mistake to begin with, because as soon as you catch, if you hook a good musky, well, you got to cut the hooks out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of whether you're changing and modifying the lure, you got to have treble replacement. Treble.
Yeah. Now your best lure you just caught him on's out of the game.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or now you got to start digging hooks or taking hooks off of other lures, which right. we've done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks close yeah. enough. Yeah.
Yeah. But, the really, you know, I think to be prepared in that respect is dedicate a tackle box to multiple split ring sizes, you know, that have the split rings, they have multiple mm-hmm. hook sizes in them. They have, you know, you have weights, I go to a hardware store and I keep lead tape in the boat,
mm-hmm.
the stick on lead tape. And you know, so that I can take away or add buoyancy and decrease buoyancy yep. on lures where I need to. And is it being too anal? Well,
no.
I would argue no.
No. Not when you're fishing behind two other people throwing the same stuff and you go, well, mine's no.
No. And not when you're fishing for a fish that you may get one. You
yeah,
know, you take your clients out and they're gonna get one chance a day, one chance in 3 or 4 days at mm-hmm. one good fish. You want to score.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to miss out on the opportunity and providing all your skills and everything are right there and you're doing a good job with that. You know, you got to have that lure's got to be right. And one, here's another thing is when you find a bait you like, I don't care what it is. I don't care what lure it is. A lot of people out there making good lures. If you find a lure you like, don't just carry one.
Yeah.
Make sure you got a handful of them. You know, you got a back stock in your boat. You don't even have to unpackage them, but make sure they're in your boat. So that if something happens to your prize lure, you've got a backup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that sounds elementary, but right? I mean,
I it's something at a certain point. Once there's a threshold you cross from I've got a tackle box and I'm going musky fishing, right?
Right.
To I'm a guide and these are the 7 baits I need. Now, yeah. I need 30 of them, but I need 7, right? And here is my, how many times have I called you over there and said, give me, how many chrome 5-inch shallow raters do you have? Send them now.
Yep.
You know, and Joe's digging around in his garage going, and that's the thing, though.
I sent you a bunch of my old handmade slot tappers a few years ago.
Chumming around going, hey, buddy. Hey, it's your old buddy Steve. Do you have by chance, Joe? No. But that's the thing is, once you get dialed in, I know what you're getting at, which is like once you're dialed in, it's like okay, they're hitting on let's say 7-inch shallow raters, and then they're hitting on Lungeon 22 shorts, right?
Yes. Yep.
Have six of those and have six of those and be ready to go. And then the thing is this. Whether it be a Livingston lure for me or Joe's baits or whoever, know the difference. I think that's the biggest thing is because the production lure is a production lure is a production lure, right? They're all going to have minute differences of know the good ones from the bad ones and make sure you got all good ones and how to tweak them.
Yes. But the big thing is do not mistake in this conversation for promoting the sale of lures.
No.
Stephen
Paul's face is on. From Joe Booker Outdoors comes.
Reloaded.
Reloaded. The Top Raider 2. It's got a grub tail on the back and it's $79.99. Send checker money to Beth Booker, Destin, Florida. Hand place grub.
You know, if you mistaken it for that, your listeners are serious folks,
right?
And I'll tell you what. On a Canadian trip, who go to remote areas, you're not going to go down the street and get those.
No,
you're in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, so, funny story.
Right?
To back that up, right?
Sure.
My big old friend from the Netherlands, Tim, right? We're doing some Eagle stuff, fish with Herbie, all this crap, right? We go out, and this is flat out, spend 3 days. It is a slop master, and if it did not have a shad body on it, it wouldn't get hit, right?
Right.
And I'm talking one of the worst Canadian cold fronts I've ever seen. High rod angle, 5-3-1 reels. You know what I'm talking about, right? Creeping. Mm-hmm. And if it didn't have a shad body on it, and after day two, guess how many shad bodies we have left? None.
Exactly.
We go to Bobby's. You know what I'm talking about? On the north end of Eagle. We go to Bobby's, and we buy every bag of crap they have. None of it was right. And we finally found one. And it was just like, boom. We're right back in the fish.
But if you didn't have Bobby's...
Well, and we...
Bobby's a good store. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. That's all that was there. And you go, they have one bag. And thank God they did, because at a certain point, you get so narrow. Dude, the same thing. Okay, remember the trip, Lake of the Woods was orange belly versus white belly.
Yep.
And like you said, it's not about selling baits. It's about preparedness. Staying dialed in.
You think about the last trip you and I were on, when the only fish the only bait they really scored consistently on was that 6-inch depth raider modified with oversized treble hooks.
Uh-huh.
And if we most guys don't bring those kind of baits on a muskie trip.
Uh-uh. They leave the spring baits, yeah.
Yeah, and we're out there in August, and the only thing they'll hit is that bait.
Mm-hmm.
So you better have duplicates, and it goes back. Those lures that you like and that you've had success with, don't go on a big trip that you've got all this preparation in without being prepared.
Yeah,
you got all this other. You got your boat and everything else all ready to go. New lines on your reel, all that kind of stuff. But if you got a one of something that's good,
yes, that's what they're going to be on.
I mean,
I know that's the thing, and that's I know why you said this isn't about selling lures. That's literally the game, though. Of like, once you're dialed in on a thing, whether it be like 2 years, 3 years, or whatever the repetition of an area or being ready for, I think it's having multiples and having them all similarly set up that you know you're going to get that performance.
Oh, yep.
You know, where it's just like, you know, sometimes I'm fishing Canada's my big old flat sided shallow raiders, right? The big old nines.
Yep.
And there's variance in those. But I want to know the variance while I'm at home. I want to do that in the pool, or I want to do that at the local pond, opposed to I'm trying to figure it out on the lake. I lost that one on a reef, and now I can't get a bite for 3 days until I figure out all that was you know, running deeper.
Yeah, you're frustrated, but what can be frustrating about that, it can be even something as crazy as, for example, a 700 Bucatel, right?
Right.
And you got one that's you caught all these fish on. It's all banged up. It's all the hair's torn off of it. It's barely got any hair on it, but it seems to be getting better and better the more it gets torn up.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got duplicates of it, and they don't produce as well. And one of the reasons they don't produce as well is that cosmetically, you know, they're just different. They got more hair on them.
Right.
They might even have a bigger profile. Yeah. And, you know, at that point, do you take and you know, modify so it looks exactly like it's like beating up an old strap.
Yeah.
Making a strap look like one of those
relics or whatever. Yeah.
Relic kind of. Yeah. They're all beat up. So it's like the people that run around in the homeless jeans today. You know.
Thank you, Boomer. Thanks, Grandpa. Hey, those kids in their homeless jeans.
Well, I'm talking about these people that buy jeans that got all kinds of holes in them. They spend a big money on it.
Yeah.
That's like a fashion today.
Right.
The same, you know, in the fishing world, you will run into those situations where you've got an old Suic.
Uh-huh.
And everything, you bought three or four of these things, but none of them work like that one. And that is a problem, and I don't have a real answer for that. Other than, like you say, you can futz around with those at back
futz
home.
Futz around it. I mean, played around before with, like, postal scales. You know, get it to the gram. You know,
wooden lures are the worst for that.
Well, just tuning them
that's
out.
That's why That's why I made my lures out of plastic.
You're not worried
but
about
even then,
what tree they cut it out of. Yeah.
What we found out, even with the Glide Raider, what we found out is that, you know, those things varied a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Subtly because of the alloys in the lead.
Uh huh. Yeah.
So, You're putting, you know, people are going, oh, this one's different than the others. You're going, well, they're all made the same. And the manufacturers will look at you who aren't fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going, we're making them all the same way. there's no reason
right.
why your one's running different. Well, if you put them on a scale, you'll find out that they actually are a little bit different. And the reason is, some of the alloys in the lead are different. So when you've got a lure, it's got a lot of, you know, a
different
lot of
composition.
Lead
yeah.
Different composition in the lead. And that does, it sounds crazy.
No, it's, like you said, is it anal to do this? But no, it's a fact of like you're talking about, I've had it happen with 10 bucks or the original Bucatels where once about 17 northern pike have shredded the skirt,
yes.
It became magical.
Now it's good.
Why is that?
Yes.
Why is that really good? Well, because now here's this tiny little profile.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
Yes.
The northerns did the work, and now muskies are actually hitting tiny little minnows with small profile, and they've changed the profile. Or, you magically change the hooks on a shallow raider, and now it weighs XXX, and the rest of, you know. Just being observant and, like you said, taking it's all observational. It's all paying attention. It's all note-keeping of, like, I've got a couple baits, quote-unquote, retired where I went, this is what I'm going to do, how I'm going to rig every one of these in the future, right? Where, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and I'm making sure it's the exact same worth split ring, and they're this hook and that hook and yada, 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 you know.
Because you've had success with it.
Had success with it, opposed to... The same thing, like we talked about, repeatability, replicatability, is just being consistent in just everything that you're doing. Anyway, we're beating the horse here. Joe, there's very few people left in the game in the north, right? We got some open water, all this stuff. What are your absolute, and I know you've done it, what's the absolute, the ice is coming, it's nasty. What is the game plan for just a lunker before everything locks up?
Oh, you know, I saw a guy catch one. That guy sent me a photograph just 2 days ago catching a big one in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised, you know, they were still getting out there here in December. You know, I think it's a trolling crankbaits is one of the things it's a go-to thing for me. When the water's cold and when the weather's cold, and you know, that's an equalizer when you can't cast. If you're out there in those really cold days at the and you're the last dog out there in the fight, you know, one of the best ways to stay efficient is to troll.
Yeah.
And one of the best ways to be efficient trolling is to snap a crankbait on, you know, and run your outboard, so that your bait is running, you know, plus or minus 2 miles per hour. And you're probably going to be, you know, cover some water until you, I like to fish in before ice up,
mm-hmm.
you know, you gotta be around bait.
Yeah.
So deep break lines, trolling, a simple game plan, deep break lines, trolling, keeps your bait wet, keeps your reel and everything efficient so you're not getting iced up. And once you've got it, and if you know the area you're fishing and you've scored there before, don't leave.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those things. The bait, like you're saying, the bait's not over the entire body of water.
Right.
Everything's tight. Things tighten, yep. They tighten up at the end of the year. I mean, it's one of those things, man. It's that, you know, Tom Gelb cut a lot of big old muskies on depth raiders about this time of year.
This time of the year. And you know what? Before him, a lot of other guys did too.
Mm-hmm.
And even the light bait guys, you know, it's kind of a lost art. Now, you know, one of the key things yesteryear that guys would do this real latest, they would basically get out on these points and these islands. And a lot of guys in the river still do this where they just still fish on really good spots with light bait.
Mm.
There's not a lot, but they're on the spot. Baits in the water.
Yeah.
And that can be as effective as anything. You know, Tony Rizzo caught all those big muskies in November on shore.
Yeah. Good point. On shore. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Sit on a point.
Yeah.
Have a fire going. Have a campfire going.
Probably drinking a coffee.
Yeah. And just have, you know, with his customers, have those lines all out there and you hear the clicker go off. Then they would jump in the boat.
Yeah.
You know, when the clicker go off, then they jump in the boat and go after that fish and set the hook. And, you know, back then it was a single hook, a gut hooking thing. Today right. It's quick strike. So line goes off, set the hook, game on.
Yeah. Now you got him. So, well, awesome, Joe. Well, I can't thank you enough. It's good catching up here, buddy. Anyway, guys, check it out. There's a bunch of stuff. Just shameless plug, we already talked baits. You can check it out. There's a bunch of holiday specials at joebookeroutdoors.com. Obviously, you can always get Joe's stuff at the Muskie Shop. Joe, what do you got coming out for the first year? I know you got some videos coming out. What's going on?
Well, you know, the popularity of the Reloaded series.
Reloaded.
We're gonna continue to do them. The library's huge, and we're going to have some cool surprises this year. We're going to go back a little bit further than we did, in the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have some of the Princecraft boat years, you know, and, mm-hmm. and the Ranger years, and you're going to see some episodes. So and they'll be featured every single week on Muskie 360, and yep. You know, coming from Fishing with Joe Booker YouTube and Rumble and. But there's going to be, you're going to probably see some of the very first episodes of me designing the Slop Master.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, it's and the Top Raider. And the Top Raider both. So, yeah, there'll be a lot of Top Water and Slop Master coming up this year. But, you know, it's fun to do this Reloaded series, Steve, because, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, that aren't of my age
haven't seen any of these
episodes on broadcast TV,
much less if they don't have a VHS player.
You're right.
And, which we need to work on.
we're bringing all that back anyway on YouTube, so that people can see it all, and you'll catch it it'll be featured every week on the app on Muskie 360.
Reloaded. All right, guys. Joe, thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you and to everybody that listens to Muskie 360, and appreciate every one of you that downloaded the app, and Merry Christmas to you.
Well, what do you think, Jay?
He's the man, the myth, the legend, the Floridian.
Floridian. Florida man, Joe Bucher, arrested.
Redfish. He's converted to redfish, folks.
Listen, if you don't pick up a felony and you live in Florida, there's something wrong with you. You go down there.
I know that.
Listen, there's two things. Florida is a lawless zone, Jay.
Well, Mikniak's living there right now.
Have you ever been there? Have you ever been to Florida? Mm-hmm. Place crazy. Right? And when you're on the claw, there ain't no law.
Mm-hmm. So, gotcha.
Right? If you know what I'm talking about. Get in them claws, there ain't no law. But yeah, Florida man. Florida man. Have you ever Googled Florida man in your birthday, Jay?
No. What is it?
Well, hold on. Let's do this real quick. Let's see. What is your birthday? I don't need the year, just the date.
10th.
Of what?
Can't say. August.
What month, dummy?
August.
Which is what month? 10-10? 10-6?
8-10.
Goodness gracious, man. I'm on the claw. Okay. Florida man. Right? Mm-hmm. I can't read that one. Florida man arrested for DUI said he smoked marijuana to prepare for the return of Jesus.
So, okay.
That is your Florida man. Do you not know this game?
No, I really have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, so you put in your birthday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be 4-10. You put your birthday in. And mine is my Florida man. Is Florida man arrested after dining on spaghetti with his bare hands?
Again, Mikniak.
I get nothing. So, this guy, I'm not kidding. Go and Google, Jay. That's all you got to do. Put in your birthday in Florida.
And it relates to a bizarre news story.
Someone in Florida has been arrested doing something exceptionally bizarre on the date of your birth.
Gotcha.
So mine is Florida man arrested after dining on spaghetti with bare hands. Jay is somebody that likes the devil's lettuce. So you'll get that anyway. It gets crazy. But yes, Joe Bucher is Florida man incarnate now. He's down there tearing up the Reds.
Yeah.
Jay, what do you want for Christmas?
World peace.
You said that last time I asked you that.
Well, because it's true, Steve.
One thing I'll say is this. What I want you to do, if you are extra blessed, I feel very fortunate in life. Life has been good to me so far, in the words of Joe Walsh. And every year what I do is I make sure I go around and check all the angel trees from the Salvation Army. So if you don't know what an angel tree is, these are vetted. They have been checked out. These are kids that are impoverished. They are having not the best life, and they want some really basic stuff. So I'm not sitting here telling you this to toot my own horn, but if you have the means to do so, please spend a little extra and go get the last names off the angel trees, because at about this time of year, if there's any left, they're probably not going to get it taken care of. So I try to go around locally and grab all those. A lot of these kids want shoes. They don't want toys. They'll be like, I want sweatpants and nice shoes to wear to school. Because if you've ever been poor, not having clean clothes is an embarrassing thing. So if you have the means to do so, check that out. I don't endorse anything other than the Muskie Shop in Livingston and the Salvation Army Angel Trees at the end of the year ever. If you have the means to do so, go pick some of those things up. It'll make you feel warm and fuzzy. You know, you don't have to spend $1 billion, but like some of those minimum needs for kids that are really screwed over by life, And I've looked into this. The Salvation Army, they do, these are not like, oh, mom and dad's got low income. You know what I'm saying? These are poor, like, life sucks kids. And not that it makes any better or worse, but it's not frivolity. These people are definitely in need. So if you have been blessed in life and things are good for you so far, and you can go take care of what others are left in your local area, I encourage you. It feels good, and to help people because, and the thing is this, I mean, I don't get preachy on here, but you know, charity is not something you just do at the holidays. You know, try to be kind and try to be good to other people. I don't talk about what me and my wife do publicly throughout the year because that's not what it's there for. You know what I'm saying? It's like, Jay, what, yeah. I hate. Do you know what my least favorite thing in the world is, Jay?
What?
People film like a YouTuber, like, I gave a homeless guy $50. Like, don't.
Then film it to right, make it right, look like you're a hero.
Views, right. Mm-hmm, that's not what it's about. And that's not all I'm talking about right here. You know, we don't have kids. We don't have this and that. And I'm very blessed and life's been good. So try to do
stuff. Giving is a good thing. Giving is good. Well, you know, make it part of your life. Don't just think that you need to do it, you know, a couple weeks a year.
Right. And just, but you know, this is a hell of a time. And growing up in Appalachia, I know some kids that had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you got the extra, do it, man. You know, and it's like our good friend Jim, the Tube Screamer, man, give to the church. Give somewhere. Do something positive. You know, have a little faith in people and do some stuff. And that's what it's all about. What are you working for at the end of the day? You know, it's not who has the most toys and the most muskies. Who cares? So, again, I'll get off my soapbox because, Jay, for a very ridiculous intro and the dumbest Joe Bucher interview you've ever heard where I say a bunch of dumb stuff, to wrap it up like that is just kind of goofy. I'm not trying to be a turd.
Well, it's the holidays, Steve, and you have to live with a ray of sunshine, you know? What? I don't know.
Buddy, I live with a ray of sunshine every day. That's what a lot of people don't realize. Nothing gets me down. Not at all. Because I am positive vibes. Anyway, Jay Bird, say goodnight.
Good night and thank you.
Good night.
Your mom is a walleye.
Folks, this is Todd, the Rodfather Kukulinski, urging you to gather the whole family around the old TV set and tune into Public Access Channel 6429, Minocqua's Beast, for Todd and Dave's Christmas extravaganza, live via satellite from the Illinois State Penitentiary. At Muskie 360 Records are proud to have posted bail and present to you the greatest muskie fishing Christmas hits from Dad and Dave.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, if you know what I mean. Just like...
Make sure you and your family don't miss this Christmas extravaganza.
I'll see you in the shower, Todd.
Felice Naughty Todd. Felice Naughty Todd. Felice Naughty Todd. Felice Naughty Todd.
Be sure to tune in December 29th at 3:15 a.m. on Minocqua's Beast for Todd and Dave's Christmas extravaganza.
I'll see you in the shower, Todd.